Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the January 22, 2017 session, focusing on Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 through 4, Stubborn Hope. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Bert Montgomery.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Welcome back, Daniel. We've missed you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the time off.
Hey, well, everybody needs it, right? I hope it was good for you.
It was. I think I mentioned this before. I took the little leave of absence for about four podcasts, but I've started a new ministry position in Richmond, Virginia as pastor of River Road Church, and that's going really well. But while that proverbial dust had to settle, I appreciate you're giving me a pass, and so I'm glad to be back with our listeners and with all of you on this podcast.
Well, we welcome you back, man.
Thanks.
Well, we're actually in our, I believe, third text in Isaiah so far in this series. And I wonder, Daniel, if you might get us started with some beginning thoughts on the passage.
I'll be glad to. And to our listeners, I'm not sure how much I can say about this passage in terms of uncovering any new light or sharing some new insight with you. And if you want to dive a little deeper into the background of the text, I'd really encourage you to watch Nikki's background video. You can find that at Faith Element as well. But this passage is about darkness and light. The reason I say I don't know that I need to go into any great depth in terms of uncovering new light or insight is because we've all experienced that, right? I mean, we've all experienced a good mixture of darkness and light. So perhaps I'll just simply call you to consider your own experience of the kind of life and existence the prophet promises for us. We who have walked in darkness have seen a great light, Isaiah says. In other words, despite the sorrow and pain and difficulties we face, our God holds out hope. But I feel the need to be clear about something. Hope for people of faith is not some Pollyannish pie-in-the-sky hope, like, I hope it doesn't rain tomorrow. No, for us, we have real hope. That nothing is over until God says it's over. And what we see now is not all that there is. Hope means we never give in to despair, as Nikki tells us, because our lives are in the hands of a living God who is always creating. My grandmama was the living embodiment of Southern hospitality all her life. If anyone in her Tuskegee, Alabama town needed food or a place to stay, Grandmama would cook them a hot meal, offer them the guest bedroom at the house she shared with Grandpapa, right next to First Baptist Church, where he was pastor. In 1997, Grandmama found out she had cancer. The doctors were hopeful that chemotherapy and radiation would make her well. She had the regular treatments, but nothing seemed to work. Now Grandmama was frail, and her hair had fallen out. We eventually had to take her to the hospital, where they could closely monitor her condition. And as many of our listeners know all too well, when you're in the hospital, you have a lot of time to think. Grandmama would spend much of the day in prayer. One day I asked her, Grandmama, are you praying that God will heal you? No, honey, she answered. I'm not asking God to help me get better because I don't think that's going to happen. I'm asking God to sit here with me because I'm scared. Sometimes I'm happy to see my family and I know God's happy too. And when I have a bad day and my pain is more than I can bear, all I can do is cry. And my God doesn't let me cry alone. When it was clear that her time on earth was drawing to a close, the doctor allowed her to go back to the small room at the retirement home she shared with Grandpapa. She was there only a few days before the nursing staff called all the family back in. It won't be long, they said. We prayed. We sang hymns. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly away. That was her favorite. Then she began to struggle to get air. Grandpapa moved his wheelchair close to her side and took her hand and said, "You go on, darling. You go on and see Jesus. Don't worry about me. I'll see you soon." And her breathing just settled down, and she died. Never before and never since have I felt so sad and yet so close to God. Hope is a funny thing. Sometimes hope is all you have, and sometimes hope can break your heart. But we don't stop hoping. No matter where we go, what we do, God will never stop loving us. God will never stop wanting the best for us, and God will always be there for us. That's why we have hope. And that's a little background on our text for today.
Thank you so much for sharing that beautiful story about your grandmother. You've kind of got us all in tears here. And it's because I think we can connect to both parts of how you told the story, that there was deep, deep pain and sadness, but there was also something that kept you. And you talked about it being hope, and hope that that your grandmother taught you that there is no need for us to feel alone. And when I am fully honest, I have to admit that there are times when I have held on to hope, but I didn't really know why. That okay, yes, there's something that's keeping me that won't let me go, but nothing feels right or good or okay. And I do feel alone. That loneliness is very real. And I think that anytime we go through something that is grief-ridden or sad or hard or painful in some way, that's a possibility for us. And I was actually talking with a friend about it recently, and they shared with me this quote, but this is from William Sloan Coffin Jr. And I think it's important. I think that something that's really important for us to acknowledge is that hope is not easy all the time. Sometimes it is, but a lot of times hope requires a tenaciousness and a stubbornness, because it is not something that has been realized, but it is something that we imagine will come in the future. So this is the quote from William Sloan Coffin Jr. It says, "Hope is a state of mind independent of the state of the world. If your heart's full of hope, you can be persistent when you can't be optimistic. You can keep the faith despite the evidence, knowing that only in so doing has the evidence any chance of changing. So, while I am not optimistic, I am always very hopeful." And I found that to be very helpful, to know that holding on to hope does not have to be something that feels good. It doesn't have to be flowers and rainbows and glitter or whatever, you know, your image of that might be, but that sometimes it's scrappy. Sometimes hope is stubbornness and tenaciousness, and by golly, I am not going to let this go. And I think that's true to our text. You know, I mean, these are people who have lived through a horrific event and time in exile. And by golly, despite the darkness, we're going to hold on to light.
Yeah. I think that's very well put. Hope doesn't fix things. Mm-mm. Hope doesn't mean everything's okay. And it sounds like William Sloan Coffin draws a pretty clear distinction between hope and optimism. Mm-hmm. You know, that hope for me seems to be so much deeper, that despite the circumstances, despite the pain and the sorrow, there is meaning here, and and there is an understanding that come what may, you know, a lot of things may happen to us, but one thing for sure, we're not alone, and that isn't superficial to me. That is a big thing, that God says, "I'll always be there for you." You talked about holding on to hope, and I had this idea of this. It's not just like we're holding on to a ledge, but almost, if you can't see on this podcast, but I've got my hands clasped together, almost like a two people holding on to each other. You know, we're holding on to hope. God's holding on to us.
True. Yeah.
And it's not. I mean, I haven't thought about it before, but that's a two-way street there. Mm-hmm. It's the gift of hope you know, assures us that we're never alone in this world. And for me, that is no small gift.
I like the image that you have of it's not just us holding on to hope, but that it is hope, or is God holding on to us. Mm-hmm. And that there have been moments in my life where I have been frustrated by the particular congregation that I was serving. And you know, when you're serving a congregation and they're behaving in ways that are not consistent with the gospel, it can kind of mess with you. It can make you really frustrated with the church in general or the church at large, and it can make you want to throw your hands up and be done with it. But in those moments, there is something that has held on to me. There is something that keeps me, that won't let me go. Maybe like when Jacob wrestled the angel, right? Like there's something mm-hmm. that won't let me go. And for me, that is hope, right? That even when I'm ready to let go and wash my hands of all of it, there is something that keeps me from letting go. So even if I let go, God won't let go of me. Gosh, and gosh, as I'm talking, like there's this sense that we don't have to hope in our ability to hold on. Our hope is in the fact that God won't let go of us, which is another way of saying we're never left alone.
I think so.
That even in our complete and total despair, when we know we're alone, we're not alone. Mm-hmm. And we don't know that until 6 months or 6 years or 60 years later, and we mm-hmm. look back and we can see that we were not alone. But there are times, you know, that the despair is great and the hopelessness is so great that hope that we're talking about is not simply, it's beyond ourselves. It's beyond holding mm-hmm. on to us.
Nikki, in your notes for your video, I noticed that you told a story about a rabbi who ends up commenting about despair as a sin, that there's a sin of despair. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, is despair a sin?
I don't know. The good rabbi said so.
Yeah.
I tend to think rabbis know what they're talking about. You know, the way that the story is told, and it was a story that I read in a sermon. I was borrowing with the story. And the sense of despair as despair makes claims that we cannot really make. I think so. Because when we despair, when we say that it is over, when we say there is no hope left, we are saying that we know what God can and can't do. We're saying that we know what God has chosen to do and not to do. But the truth of the matter is, we live in a world in which God constantly surprises us, in which God shows up in ways that we never expected God to show up. And when we feel like we want to despair, it always helps me to remember that there are people in the Judeo-Christian history who have had moments when they should have despaired, right? That they should have let it go. They should have, by all human measures, they should have said, thrown their hands up and said, I'm done with this. But in those moments, God shows up. And we can read that in hindsight. We have the benefit of millennia to see the way God has worked. But I have to imagine that in the moment, those people did not know that. When Ruth and Naomi left their home to go back to their people, like they didn't know if they were going to be welcomed. They didn't know that it was going to be safe. That was a scary journey. When Esther stood up before the king, I mean, he could have just chopped off her head. You know, like it could have gone the wrong way. And so they did not have any real guarantee in their own safety and in their own, this is a terrible way to say this, but in their own okayness. And I think that this brings up another piece of hope, is that sometimes, and I think one of you wrote this in our kind of writing conversation before we podcast, is that sometimes the hope that we hold on to isn't for us, but it's for the people who come after us. Like, we may never experience the benefit of that, but that we hold it for those who come after us. Who said that? One of you said that.
That was me.
Oh, good. You want to talk about that some more?
Well, I mean, I was actually thinking about Elie Wiesel and his experiences, because I read, if you've read his work, Night, you know, it's haunting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you don't know his story, he was a child in a German concentration camp. He survived it, obviously, but, well, I'll just read you a piece of what he wrote. He said, "Never shall I forget that night, the first night in camp, which has turned my life into one long night, seven times cursed and seven times sealed. Never shall I forget that smoke. Never shall I forget the little faces of the children whose bodies I saw turned into wreaths of smoke beneath the silent blue sky." I mean, as you were talking, Nikki, I mean, this idea that we should turn, you know, there are situations in life in which, how do you hang on to hope, mm-hmm. right? And that, too, obviously, there are horrors that we do to one another that certainly qualify as that. And so this idea that there is, that we can see God at work in a longer game that may well not be for, I mean, there were people that were roasted, right? And they were killed simply because of how they were born. Mm-hmm. And they didn't receive the benefit of their own hope if they had it.
Right.
And if you read Night, he talks about how they clung to all kinds of pieces of hope. Mm-hmm. They would hear a bomb fall and think, oh, you know, we're about to be rescued, or, you know, the help is coming, or they would convince themselves that the war was almost over and they would be released, or that the next selection of who would go in line was going to be the last selection and they might survive it. You know, it's you know, how we cling to hope, it's hard, but you're right. It may not be for us. It may be that our work, our fight, our resisting leads to hope for those who come after us.
You know, I can't help but think of an illustration. One of my favorite movies, we've probably talked about this in previous podcasts before, is Shawshank Redemption, based mm-hmm. on the Stephen King short story. And that theme of hope is the dominant theme that carries throughout the movie. You've got this, an innocent man sent to prison for life for a murder he didn't commit. I'm sorry if I'm, spoiler alert. It's on TV almost every day now on one of the channels, so I assume everybody's seen it. And everything, every horrible reality of prison life happens to this guy. He is abused, he's beaten, he's raped, attacked. He gets in good with the head of the prison. Mm-hmm. Warden gets in good with the warden, finds some evidence that might clear him, and finds out that the warden's corrupt, and he's never going to get out. And so he just keeps pounding on him. And at one point, his best friend, played by Morgan Freeman in the movie, Red, it says, you know, this hope, he's seen people hope, and it drives people crazy, because you keep envisioning something that's just never going to happen. And he's sort of asking Dufresne, the good guy, to let go, to give in and just acknowledge there's nothing here and there's nothing that's going to change, to give up hope, give in to philosophical nihilism, I guess. And Dufresne never does. He keeps living as though there's something else out there. And then, of course, we find out at the end there is. And it's this great, great ending. But he says, remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. And the end of the story has a happy ending, which is, you know, unlike many Stephen King type things, but has a happy ending. It's a celebration of hope. And I thought about that when you were talking about Elie Wiesel, you know, the darkness. And every time somebody thinks about, and maybe the soldiers are going to come and get us today, and they don't come. Hope just there's something external. And, you know, we keep talking about, Nikki, you said earlier about, you know, when we're ready to let go, when we're ready to give up, that sometimes that's when the hope shows up for us. And I believe that, but I also know that there are sometimes we are not just ready, we do give up and we do let go. Mm-hmm. And the hope doesn't come right away. It may be a little while longer. It's a tricky thing, but it comes, you know, Viktor Frankl, another Jewish Holocaust survivor, talks about finding meaning in all these external circumstances can strip everything away from us except our own ability to choose to believe in something else, to live for something beyond ourselves in spite of all the evidence. So everything can come and strip away everything except for our determination to hope. You know, this is difficult stuff. This is I hope we win the Super Bowl, or I hope I get a better job next year, or I hope, you know, our bills get paid this week or something like that. I mean, this is deep and it is dark. You can't separate hope and light from the darkness. You can only have it in the midst of hopelessness and light in the midst of darkness.
That's when it shines so brightly.
Yeah.
I mean, as you were talking, Bert, I mean, these are obviously much lighter tales, but I mean, modern movies and literature are full of these themes, right? I mean, some of your favorite works, the Harry Potter books.
Yes.
The Lord of the Rings trilogy are eat up with this idea of these seemingly powerless figures or small figures going up against great darkness.
Yeah. Going up against darkness that most people would choose to avoid.
Yeah,
it's costly. I think that one of the biggest truths that I heard in what you just said was that you can't have hope without darkness, because if it's not there, then it's not hope. It's reality. Hope implies that the thing that we are looking forward to is not yet. And so the two are implicitly bound together with one another.
You know, sometimes we talk about hope as what we wish for, what we want something to be different than what it is. And some people have criticized faith and hope and Christianity as wishful thinking. You know, let's be real. Frederick Buechner, who I quote very often, writes about, he doesn't speak about hope, but he talks about wishful thinking as hope. He's not going to use that word, but it's very relevant to what we're talking about here. He says that Christianity is mainly wishful thinking. Even the part of judgment and hell reflects that some of us wish somewhere somebody's keeping a good score. Dreams are wishful thinking. Children playing at being grown up, that's wishful thinking. Interplanetary travel is wishful thinking.
Yes.
Sometimes wishing is the wings the truth comes true on. Sometimes the truth is what sets us wishing for it. Listen to those last two lines again. Sometimes wishing, or in our case, hope, sometimes wishing is the wings the truth comes true on. And sometimes the truth is what sets us wishing for it.
Thank you all for these good words this night.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. Good night.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.